stories don't define you. How you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker of Elkins Consulting.
When we share stories, whether in our personal or business lives, how we share them makes a difference in how we remember them and in how we're perceived by the people we're sharing them with. When you're listening to this podcast, I encourage you to listen and consider your own related stories. To listen and think about which stories in your life might have impacted you in a similar way. And think about how you share those stories and the messages they carry for you and for the people who are hearing them.
Well, by way of another wonderful introduction from my friend Annette Taylor, I am sitting here visiting with Alana Sheeran, who is making a movie called Listen Closely. And once I checked out the website about that movie, I absolutely had to invite her to join me on Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. Thank you for joining me, Alana.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here talking with you.
Well, I have to tell you that part of why I was so intrigued by the movie and so touched by the clips that I saw on the website is that at the very beginning of the pandemic in late March, I offered active listening webinars for free. And I did it 3 times and they were very well attended. One of them had 30 people join and it was kind of random. I didn't even know who was joining at any given time. I didn't have the forethought to collect email addresses and, you know, do all the right things as a self-employed person. I didn't do any of that. But those webinars were really eye-opening for me in terms of what people thought listening really was. Mm-hmm. And so I was intrigued by your movie and really, really eager to learn more about it and to help in some way. So now I'm super excited to talk to you about it. So thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited to talk with you about it too.
So the first question I always ask my guests in order to give our listeners some context for what they're going to hear later on in the conversation is I would love for you to share something about yourself that most people probably wouldn't know. People who know you now that don't know this about you or are unlikely to know this about you.
Well, I think I'll share two little things that are related. And one thing a lot of people do know, but the other is the second piece of it that they don't, which is that when I was in my early 20s, I grew up in Canada and I went to the Yukon Territory, up to Dawson City, Yukon, to be a can-can dancer in a casino up there. And once I was there, I fell in love with the North. And so the next year I went back and I lived in a little trailer with an outhouse that was plugged up to, or it was connected to somebody's garden hose. And that's how I would shower. And I would go out and forage for morel mushrooms. And
this is outside of Calgary?
No, this is outside. This is north. This is beside Alaska.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's up north. It's northern Canada. It was a little town of 2,000 people, but it gets about 50 or 60,000 tourists through every year. It's a gold rush town.
Oh.
So, yeah. So in my 20s, I lived in a trailer with an outhouse in the Yukon.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. All I can imagine is the gigantic mosquitoes that you would encounter in that kind of place.
Yeah, I don't remember the mosquitoes. There are a lot of things I remember, but I don't honestly remember the mosquitoes. So
now I'm curious, you lived alone in this little trailer, right?
I did.
For how many months? Or 8 weeks, 12 weeks?
Let's see. That summer I was there, I think, for 3 months. So, yeah, so about 12 weeks. There were others. I would not stay a full winter, so I went back for 4 seasons. Mm-hmm. And I lived in a cabin the last two and a house the first one, but the second one I lived in the trailer. And yeah, it was actually wonderful. It was so private and quiet. And I was in a time in my life where I was working 2 jobs. I was working in a bar and also in a clothing store. And I would just go in between jobs and I would sit just outside my little trailer. And there's this little creek that went by and I would just stare at it for hours. And I had no idea that I had no idea what I was doing, but I think I was just sort of processing being in my 20s and just needing space And I got that space in a really interesting way. And I think so fondly of that time in my life.
Wow. Do you remember being lonely at some point?
Yes, I do. Because I was still in college and I missed my friends. But also, you know, there was something that was so overstimulating about all the work that I was doing. And it was just so peaceful. And I think I was meditating without realizing I was meditating. I would just go to a place of stillness.
That sounds amazing. I'm sitting here like imagining you sitting on a log or the steps of your trailer and just breathing and hearing all the interesting sounds of the critters around you and the water and the wind blowing up through the trees. And I can just sit there next to you. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
It was a special time.
Yeah. Well, I can really relate to that now, spending the time I do on the mountain behind my house here in Montana. And our listeners know that I spend a lot of time hiking up that mountain. It's called Mount Helena. And so I think that's part of why I can relate. And I think I could have related in my mid-20s as well, because I studied abroad in Australia when I was 19 and hitchhiked through New Zealand by myself on the way back. And there were many times where I was by myself for hours at a time, just kind of being. Mm-hmm. And I hope that more people in their youth, in their mid-20s, early to mid-20s, start to be more intentional about doing that and taking that time. Our older son is 21, and he is spending a lot of time out on lakes and streams just fishing by himself, spending hours processing, exactly as you said. And so, I just got a chill. That sounds like an amazing experience. So I'm guessing that has had a lot to do with what shaped you into what you're doing now, that taking that time, understanding the difference between overstimulation and being lonely and choosing alone versus lonely, because that all has to do with the movie, Listen Closely. So first, can you tell us a little bit about where you are in respect to the movie? And just for our listeners, this is being recorded in late August. So whatever we do in the blog post associated with the podcast, when it's released, I'll make sure that there is an update to the status if there is an update at that time.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so we have filmed 18 expert interviews with all sorts of incredible people. We got one of the last interviews with Ram Dass before he passed.
Wow.
Daniel Siegel, Dr. Daniel Siegel, who you know, is incredible, best-selling author and brain, you know, so much knowledge around the brain and brain development and child development. Gay and Katie Hendricks, we interviewed a police chief in Texas, Chief Mac Tristan. We interviewed another professor at UCLA in Chicano and African American Studies, Gay Teresa Johnson, who's incredible. She's written books on things like the way music is used by immigrant populations to claim space in their new country. And it's just really, we've interviewed this incredible array of people. We've also we went to Corcoran State Prison and interviewed some inmates there who are part of a program. And we actually interviewed one of the founders of the program, Douglas Knoll, and the program is called Prison of Peace. And he's written a wonderful book about it. And these men talked about how their lives have changed through learning to listen to both themselves and to other people, and that they're in the most horrible place, truly one of the most horrible places you could be, you know, a maximum security prison. And for the first time, they have actual friends in there, and they have changed their relationships with people on the outside. And so anyway, we've done all these wonderful interviews, And we are in the process right now of raising more funds and figuring out how to finish filming in the time of COVID-19. So that's where we are.
Wow. Wow. So I'm guessing that means you don't really have a timeline because you're still strategizing to finish. What do you still need to do?
Well, for filming, for production, we have some story to film. So we have all these wonderful interviews and tons of fantastic information. And the original plan was a little derailed by the pandemic. So trying to figure out how we can film, or how we can sort of modify the original plan to film sort of the heart of the film, which is really about real people. I mean, we have real people who've changed their lives, but sort of more in depth people who've changed their lives. And one of the things that I'm really focusing on is sort of two sides of the same coin. One is, how do we use listening to develop a healthy brain, to develop a healthy whole human? And on the other side of the coin is, as adults, when things have gone wrong in a marriage or in a life where someone has made choices that have landed them in a, you know, position they don't want to be in, whether that's prison or not, how do we use listening to rewire the brain, to give ourselves a fresh start and to really allow ourselves to change as human beings?
So it sounds like you're involving some concepts of neuroscience in terms of shifting neural pathways. And it sounds like what you're trying to do for to finish it is to integrate those amazing interviews about the what, you know, what listening is and why it works, and integrate it into an application side of this is an example of how it works and this is why it works, and demonstrating it in real relationships and how things have shifted for those people.
Yes. And why it matters.
Yeah.
Why it matters to people's hearts as opposed to people's minds.
Right. Right. Well, I just posted a storytelling tip last week that the most effective storytellers are really good listeners. Mm-hmm. And that you have to be a good listener and observer in order to tell really meaningful, effective stories. So I can see the application immediately, of course. So this makes me curious, especially given the original part of our conversation about being alone without being lonely, because I really see a very strong connection there between when you said listening to yourself, being a better listener for yourself, because I think of that as the greatest act of love is to listen. And so listening to yourself is giving love to yourself, which I think is a real issue with the populations that you were first describing to me. Mm-hmm. So where was it that you suddenly had that light bulb go, this is important and I need to find a way to share these concepts?
You know, listening has always been important to me. I'm a natural listener, I think, because I was a pretty shy kid. So I would always sort of listen rather than engage unless I was really comfortable. And everything I've done in my life, I've always ended up in a position where I'm a listener, whether that's as a bartender or a Pilates teacher or an actor. But what really, really triggered it for me, and I went back to school and got a master's in clinical and community psychology. So, you know, I have formal training in listening as well. And I've used it in my own life. My marriage fell apart early on and we rebuilt it, raising a child. She was born just after I finished my master's degree. So of course my brain was full of attachment theory and all of that. And I can see the effects in my own life. But what really, really triggered it was actually the 2016 election. And it was because I feel on such a deep level, and I'm sure that there are many of your listeners who feel the same thing, is that we've really stopped listening to each other. And so many of us don't even know how to listen to each other. So after the election, I was kind of burnt out on a personal level, career level. And I live right by the beach. So I was out on the beach every day, just kind of walking and sitting and listening to myself and thinking, I'm never going to have a creative idea again. I'm so burnt out. And I had just seen, and I think it was Ezra Klein who made the video, but it was about Hillary Clinton. And it was about how he was trying to figure out why people who had worked with her and had known her just loved her and were hugely loyal to her. And yet on the campaign trail, she came across as very cold. And one of the things people kept saying to him was, she's a wonderful listener. She's a wonderful listener. She makes you feel heard. And he just dismissed it and dismissed it and dismissed it until finally he realized this seems to be the key. So what it came down to was that she is someone who is a wonderful listener, makes people feel heard. And as you said, one of the greatest acts of love is actually to listen to someone. And that's one of the quotes that we have in our teaser video is, you know, being heard is so close to being loved that most people can't tell the difference. And so in the video, he was talking about how the campaign trail is set up for oratory, right? It's set up for speaking. It's set up for a typically male skill set. And that was not her skill set necessarily. Her skill set was really one-on-one and listening. And so it just got me thinking. And again, you know, it's been important to me in my life, but I just thought, gosh, I have seen listening change lives and save lives and save marriages and make such a difference. And I think I need to try and make this a creative project. I think I just need to do this. And kind of sat on it for a while. And then my husband does something similar to you in certain ways. He facilitates workshops, selling skills, communication skills, negotiation skills. And so I talked to him about it and he said, oh yeah, I talk about listening all the time. And I'd never thought of that. And so he got excited about it. And then I told a couple of friends and they got excited about it. And so that was it. I was just kind of off and running at that point. And you know, I've been on the other side of the camera and I've produced theater and directed theater, but it's my first documentary. So it's definitely been a learning curve.
Oh, yes. That's a completely different thing.
Yes, yes, yes. So thankfully, I've recently brought on a wonderful producer. I have a fantastic director of photography and I've brought on a wonderful producer who has some great experience. But so I'm not doing it all on my own, but it's been really fascinating process to learn more about.
Wow. Yeah. And I could see why that would push you to that point. A lot of us had very strong reactions after the 2016 election, one way or the other. And one of the things that I noticed immediately after was that I was feeling really sad. I felt betrayed by people. And I think what I had to do to separate myself was to remember that it wasn't against me, even though it felt like it was against me. One of the things that I noticed was that I would take it as, don't you know, this man has proven himself to be anti-Semitic and sexist, and I am a Jewish woman. So by voting for him, you must not love me. Mm-hmm. And I had to really separate myself. And then I had to really see that both sides were seeing completely different information. Like my Facebook feed looks really different from the Facebook feed of the people that voted the opposite direction politically. And so I had to really remind myself that it's about loving people, regardless of some snippet in time where I see something and I just jump to judgment based on one Facebook post or one time in a period in somebody's life where they go this direction that I can't understand. And so I had to start looking long term, like, well, what about all their other behavior? What about all the things you know about them? And I think it's not unlike those family relationships, like with a spouse, where you decide what's a deal breaker and what's not a deal breaker. Mm-hmm, and you start looking at all the wonderful things that person brings to your life versus these two things that they don't. And is that a deal breaker? And I think each of us has to decide that. Is it a deal breaker?
It's, yeah. You know, one of the women we interviewed, Desiree Attaway, who does consulting around diversity and inclusion and equity and justice, said something wonderful. And unfortunately, we'd already turned the cameras off, so I say it out loud as much as possible because I think it's brilliant. Is when you go into a conversation, or when you go into a conversation, what do you want your relationship to be like on the other side? So do you want a long-term relationship? Is this relationship important? Well, then you can press pause. You can have the conversation again. You can, you know, have the conversation over time. You can sort of modulate how you're having the conversation. And so, like you just said, each of us needs to decide for ourselves as we enter into these difficult conversations, what do we want the relationship to look like on the other side?
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I talk about when it comes to StrengthsFinder and communication from that is, it's not about changing you. It's about understanding how you're being perceived and what your intention is after the conversation. How do you want this to end is how I've always presented it. So I really appreciate Desiree's comment, because I think that can help people think about what they're putting out there on social media. If they just stop and take that moment to think, okay, what do I want my relationships to be like out here, even in this digital space? So tell me, when you heard from your husband, he was super excited about it. He thought this really could be a valuable project. It could really help people. And your friends that you talked to were like, oh yeah, you should totally do that. What was the next step? Like, what was it that moment where the light bulb went on and you started really putting pieces together?
So what we did next was actually probably a little bit backwards. Probably what I should have done is just research. But what we did was put a little video together to kind of give the flavor of the flavor of the heart of the film. I wanted people to see that, and I wanted people to see that we could make it look good too. And so I actually wrote a poem, and we filmed some footage and we put it to the poem, and it definitely got people interested and people thought it was lovely. And it's kind of a little standalone piece in itself, actually. And then I just started asking people if they would talk to me. I started doing interviews and people just kept saying yes. And, you know, we were raising money at the same time, but just sort of smaller amounts as we were figuring it out. And yeah, people just kept saying yes. And so we just kept going. And then all of a sudden we kind of ran out of money. And
shockingly enough.
Yes, exactly. As that happens. And then it was like, okay, we've got all this incredible information. And I started talking with other people who were documentary filmmakers, and they were giving me good advice. How are you going to tie all this together? Because I didn't want it to be just a film of talking heads. And so then we started working on, oh, right, what is the story behind it? And we were just about to start filming that when the pandemic hit. So again, you know, it's one of those things where life feels really chaotic right now with everything that's happening. And, you know, I'm sitting here, as I said to you earlier, with my windows closed because there are so many fires in California that I'm breathing smoke if I have them open. And it just feels like, how do we even function in this time, this political climate, this climate change climate, this pandemic? So really wanting to honor what's happening in the world around me as I rethink what's happening. You know, one of the things that's always been very important to me is looking at the micro and the macro. So looking at the systemic issue when populations are not listened to, not just individuals. And so all the protests that have been happening, you know, I'm really interested in, I don't want to, that's not my story to tell, but I do feel like it's a part of our story, part of the story around culturally not listening to each other. So just trying to integrate all of that right now and then really get ourselves set up so that when hopefully things ease, we're ready to just go with finishing up the filming. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll be relevant no matter when you finish it.
So that's the thing.
That's the thing. It's not like suddenly people are going to start being good listeners. So
I know.
Don't think you're at risk of not being relevant when you get it finished. I can tell you, I've been working with hundreds of coaching clients and teams, particularly in the employment area, and that's not going to go away anytime soon, the need for this kind of work. But it brings me back to this whole idea of you ran out of money, and I'm imagining that was a point where you had to decide what to do next, whether to go forward, how to go forward. Was there a time where you were discouraged, where you thought maybe this isn't right, or was it always like, no, this is so important that you were driven to just make it happen no matter what it took?
Gosh. Yeah. There have been times where I've been discouraged, of course. I mean, it's a huge project. And I think if I'd gone kind of quote unquote the right way, I probably would never have gotten anything on camera, because I think I would have gotten really discouraged. But because I just leapt into it and we have this incredible footage, even on the days where I'm discouraged, there is this deep knowing that the world needs this information in some capacity. And also because I feel like there's a listening revolution happening. I feel like it's something that people are waking up to. I see people talking about it on Facebook. You know, there are wonderful organizations who are attempting to get Democrats and Republicans to listen to each other. There are all sorts of things happening out there in the world. And so I feel like this is a piece of it, and it just needs to happen. And I also feel, and this might sound a little wild, but I don't know if you've read Big Magic, but she talks about a story in Big Magic where she was writing a novel and ended up talking with someone else, another author that she didn't know. And the other author was writing almost exactly the same story. And it was this very specific, very random story. And the conclusion she came to was that it sort of, quote unquote, the universe had handed her an idea and she'd started on it and then put it down and then it handed it to someone else. And I really feel like this film was handed to me to shepherd into the world. And I think if I ever put it down, I would be so heartbroken if someone else picked it up. And that's not to say that there shouldn't be another film about listening. There actually, one just came out, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really excited about it. I think it's called Listen Courageously. Oh, I don't remember. Anyway, it's a very different film, but I just feel excited that people are starting to really bring this up more into the collective consciousness. But yeah, absolutely. There are days where I'm like, this is ridiculous. This is way too hard. I don't know if I can do it. And I also say, like marriage and parenting, the sort of the most rewarding things, the things that are the most worth doing in my life are the things that are the hardest. And so that's what keeps me going. You know, I wouldn't give up on my marriage. I wouldn't give up on my child. I'm not going to give up on this. Yeah.
Well, there are a couple of things that I pulled from that. And one for our listeners is jumping in and not doing it the way you're supposed to do it is often the only way to keep yourself motivated and to do it your way. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say that doing that short film with the poem first was, it solved so many problems right up front. like having something to show people that you wanted to interview, especially the more famous people that would have been difficult to get a hold of. Mm-hmm. You had something that they could see, that they could touch and feel and know that you were serious about it. And they could sense your heart in it and, mm-hmm. and why you're doing it. And that's a story right there. And when you tell a story so powerfully from your heart like that, you're going to develop the advocates you need to make it happen. And yes. that is something I talk about a lot in my work with as a storytelling coach, is that when you start from the story, then everything can fall into place. Mm-hmm. And I believe that strongly. It's how I've lived my life, all of my life. So I really appreciate hearing that. The other thing that struck me was you had all this material from people that you trusted and believed and had incredible, knew had incredible value in those interviews you had already done. So I'm guessing you had a sense of responsibility to them as well, mm-hmm. that you had to use this amazing material that you had collected.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there's still, my producer keeps kind of pushing me, like, are you sure this isn't a 6-part series? Or, you know, is it a mm-hmm. single documentary? Is it a web series? You know, there are still ways of getting it out there that aren't necessarily a feature-length documentary. I'm very attached to the feature-length documentary idea, but also mm-hmm. open to, especially in this time, you know, how do we mm-hmm. really, how do we get the information out in the most helpful way? So, you know, that's part of where we're at right now, is really mm-hmm. getting clear on that.
Were there any interviews in particular that when you think of this movie, that one pops into your head? And I ask that because when you talked about was it Gay Teresa
Johnson?
Mm-hmm. Johnson, you kind of lit up in a different way, and I'm assuming it's because there's something about music in it, and you obviously have a connection to music, dance, theater. But I'm guessing that there were multiple that pop in your head. But what's one that when you think about the filming, for some reason, that's the image you see, that person sitting, you hear their voice in your head.
You know, gosh, there are so many wonderful interviews. I and Gay Johnson is definitely one of them, and Desiree. But funnily enough, what's really coming to me right now is interviewing Chief Tristan in Texas. Mm. And he is a firm believer in servant leadership and problem-oriented policing. And I know policing is such a hot topic right now. But sitting with him and we asked him a few questions, and then he literally talked for an hour and a half straight. Like, it was just, there was so much information coming out of him, his almost 30 years of experience, I think 25 years of experience as a police officer and as a chief, and just watching him remember things that made him, that brought him to tears, and just the vulnerability of that. I don't know why there was something so open about someone that wouldn't necessarily be open in front of a camera. And then the other piece of that that comes up for me is the men at Corcoran that we interviewed, and just, you know, one of them sat down in front of me and said, I wasn't going to do this. I'm a very private person. But if I can say something that keeps one person out of prison, I said, this place is so horrible. If I can say or do anything that helps one person change their mind and not make the mistakes that I made, that's why I'm here. And I just, like, oh, even now it just gives me chills, right?
I got them too, as you were telling that. And I wonder if it's partly because it was unexpected. You know, the other names, Daniel Siegel, you would expect that kind of language and touching, clear, thoughtful intelligence. I mean, you would just expect that from him. Also from Gay Johnson, you had that expectation. But I'm guessing you went into those conversations either without expectation or with different expectation. whatever that was. And so they surprised you in some way. So maybe that's why those are the conversations that mm-hmm. really bring you back to those moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think for me too, you know, we originally started with covering six areas, parenting, love relationships or intimate relationships, end of life, social justice, and business. And so we had these, so I interviewed people in all six different areas, and I, you know, there were such beautiful things that happened in each of those topics, you know, sitting down with someone who has become a hugely successful business person and talking with him about his journey as a listener. And how his family might still say that he's not the greatest listener in the world, but at work, people say he's a fantastic mm-hmm. listener, you know? So, and how, mm-hmm. how sometimes it can be hard to translate. And also just, you know, I think he's in the teaser video as well saying, you know, I think you, once you get someone to realize I'm going to misquote him. I can't remember the exact words, but essentially once you start listening, your career takes off. You know, once you realize that if you're doing all the talking, you're not actually doing what you should be doing to get ahead.
That makes so much sense. It's taken me decades. I think I was 40 before I started actually listening. And even now at 50, I keep catching myself doing too much talking and not enough listening. So I love that he said that. That was, who said that?
David Gao.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that makes a lot of sense for when I think about the people that I found to be the best leaders, the ones who brought the best in me, the best out in me, mm-hmm. encouraged me to bring everything I could to something. It was somebody that I would consider to be a good leader or a good listener. So that makes a lot of sense. I'll have to look him up and learn a little bit more about him. So as you think about the film and your relationship with it, you've told me the story of listening to Chief Tristan speak and the Prisons of Peace program, prisons or prisoners?
Prison of Peace.
Douglas Noel. And you've kind of told me those stories to a certain extent. Is there anything about this journey for you, a specific incident that pops into your head as we're speaking, that you kind of find yourself sitting there again or standing there again, the light, the sounds around you, because you're obviously a very auditory person. That's what I'm getting from our conversation. Do you have something that just popped into your head, a vision, an image, a sound?
Yeah, actually being with Ram Dass.
Mm.
It was an incredibly magical afternoon. And, you know, he had aphasia. And so it took him along from his stroke in his 60s. And so it takes him time to get words out. But to sit with someone and to give them the space to get those words out and to really, in those moments of being present and listening, to also realize how much, even being a listener, I don't give people the space to get their own words out. And, you know, I was talking about the idea of discernment the other day, how we need to discern when someone needs to be really deeply listened to and then when we're just having back and forth conversation, because relationships are built on both of those things. And so what it said to me, you know, in this presence of this human who spent so much of his life finding peace and sharing love and peace with others, and just the sort of the brilliance of his light being in the same room with him, and making the choice to very clearly give him the space that he needed to get the words out. And in that moment, it just really allowed me to drop into myself and be really present with myself and with my own ability to discern when that's appropriate and when that's not, and how much I still get caught up in my own kind of reactions and needs and step on other people, you know, especially my parents or my husband, or, you know, like mm-hmm. it's so easy to do.
Those we love.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that moment of just really being present with all of it at the same time was really beautiful. And just, you know, he was just an incredible person to be in the room with too. Mm-hmm.
Was it in a studio?
No, it was in his home in Mon Maui.
In his home, okay.
Yeah, he doesn't leave, or he didn't leave very much.
He didn't leave.
Yeah.
And what was that like? What did it look like, the room that you were in?
It was a living room, you know. It was a living room. It just, you know, he had a large altar with all of his people on it. But just a beautiful little space, and his house
windows?
Staff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have birds in the interview. they were talking to us. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was just a really lovely moment. And then my director of photography has a relationship with, or had a relationship with, Ram Dass, and that's one of the main reasons that we got there. And so we were invited back for a kirtan later that night, and that was really lovely too. Mm-hmm. So lots of
was
people.
It in the same room?
Yeah, and Jack Kornfeld was there, and you know, just all sorts of wonderful kind of luminaries and regular folks. So it was really special.
Well, that sounds pretty amazing, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where this takes you, where this journey becomes something applied and resonant with a larger audience, a broader audience, because I would love to see this really make the impact that it has the potential to make. So as we wrap this up, what would you want listeners to take away from our conversation? How would they get in touch with you? What are the things that you would want them to do? What's the call to action for our listeners at this point, besides better listeners? And I said that because one of the things that you brought up when you talked about Ram Dass aphasia and giving him that space is that I often struggle with that because I see the discomfort and I kind of want to help. Is mm-hmm. you know, jumping in with a saying, well, is this what you mean, so that they don't have to finish the sentence if it's so much work for them, because mm-hmm. I have a friend that is struggling with that as well from a stroke. And so other than being good listeners, what would you want to share?
You know, I think it's really the word that keeps coming to me is discernment. And I think that what we really want to do is just learn more about ourselves so that we are more present and conscious when we are with others. And, you know, that there, so often we're walking around with so much pain and so much confusion and so much fear. And the more we can listen to that in safe ways, whether that's on our own or with a, you know, professional help or religious help or whatever it is, I really feel like the more we can just be present with what is, the more we are able to listen to what's next. You know, like if I'm present with what I'm feeling in this moment, I am much more able to discern what I need to do next in order to be okay. And if I am present with my child in a moment of pain or confusion, I am much more able to listen to what she might need next. And so I really feel like, presence is probably the sort of the thing that we can, the biggest gift. And that presence allows us to listen, to be better listeners. And I think that's really, if we can just take a breath before we speak, before, I had a teacher in theater school, sorry, not theater school. I did go to theater school, but in my master's degree, who said, you know, you're not responsible for your first reaction when something happens, that first thought that pops into your head, but you are responsible for every subsequent thought and every action. And so to me, that gives us a little bit of grace where I have an unkind thought, I have a racist thought, I have I hate this person because they've said this political thing thought, you know, we're allowed to have those reactions. They're based on so many deep physical, psychological, could be trauma, could be anything, right? But if we take that breath, if we take that pause and go, that's a really uncomfortable thought or feeling or reaction that I just had. Whew, that's not who I am. What's my next thought? And then what's my next thought? And then what's my action? You know, it just gives us that little bit of grace and that little bit of space within ourselves to be better listeners, to be more present. And it's not easy. It takes conscious effort and some work and practice.
Excellent. Yes, it does. Definitely. Well, that is a wonderful wrap up right there. It's so meaningful and actionable. It should be relatively simple to start thinking in those lines. So it's not something that is really hard work to get started. It's hard work once you decide to make it a consistent practice. Mm-hmm. But a simple action to start, I think, is the way that people will actually make that shift.
Yes. Yes. And it really is simple. I mean, it's all very simple. It's just not necessarily easy.
Right. Alana, this has been such a pleasure. And I'm sure our listeners will want to look up the movie, the trailer, and I will have links to connect with Alana. Are you on LinkedIn?
I am on LinkedIn. I'm not super active there, but I am definitely on LinkedIn. Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll have Alana's LinkedIn link so you can connect with her there. I will also have a link to the Listen Closely film website. And on that website, I think there's a place that people can contribute if they want to participate in the finishing up of this outstanding idea and project.
Absolutely. And I just want to say that we are fiscally sponsored by a 501c3. And so all donations are fully tax deductible to the extent that you can, that, you know, the extent of the law, and that we have some wonderful perks for people who donate too.
Oh, excellent. That is good to hear. People like that.
Yes.
Even if it's just a pen, people just like to feel like there's some gratitude there. I contributed and I got this wonderful pen. Sometimes I used to do that when the public radio stuff would come up on the radio and I'd call just because I wanted to have the t-shirt or that and to say, you know, I'm contributing to public radio. But Alana, thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Sarah. It really has been wonderful.
Thank you for listening to Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. If you're planning an event or company retreat and want to bring in a memorable, entertaining, and highly practical speaker as your keynote speaker or workshop facilitator, please visit us at elkinsconsulting.com to learn how we can help and provide a memorable keynote or breakout session. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.